This hour of the Kevin Miller Show is brought to you by MinutemanRx.com. American families, American veterans, taking care of Americans, fighting for America.
My message to Republicans is join us, get on board. They don't do anything except block me.
This is not about impeachment. This is about his faithfully executing the laws of our country.
Fighting for Idaho.
With one word of participation from the governor, all of this would have gone away. This onslaught is because the party would not bend over relative to the health care exchange.
Fighting for you.
We don't need more laws. We need virtue. And looking to texts like the Bible and to the Constitution and this stepping away from the moral decay that has infiltrated our society that I think will save this country.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Good to have you with us. Phone number is 580-5436, Kevin at KIDOAM.com. Ed Klein is coming on, and everybody's buzzing about Ed Klein. And we've known Ed for years. Great book on Katie Couric, if you want to know the real skinny on that big phony. Or, as we've said, his books on the Kennedys and everyone else. And he joins us now. Ed Klein, welcome back with Kevin Miller.
Kevin, it's a great pleasure to be back with you after all this time.
You know, I wondered what you're up to, and then all of a sudden, blazing all over the internet, Drudge, it's Blood Feud.
Yes, Blood Feud, the Clintons versus the Obamas is my new book. It's already number three on Amazon's top 100 bestsellers, and it's past Hillary's book a long time ago. And I think the reason for this, quite frankly, Kevin, is that up to now, there's been an awful lot written about the feud between the Tea Party and the Republican Party and the establishment part of the Republican Party. Like, that's the only story. But in fact, there's an even bigger feud going on between the two big Democratic families, the Clintons and the Obamas.
Ed Klein, you've been blowing it up everywhere with your revelations from Blood Feud, now Amazon number three, available everywhere. How do you get this stuff? I always ask you this. Everybody asks you this. But if the stuff weren't true, they get you, so it has to be true. How do you find out about Hillary's bad heart or Bill Clinton and Obama's golf game? You weren't there.
No, I wasn't there, but I certainly interviewed people who either were there or were told by the principals, meaning the Obamas, or the Clintons, what went on. So, you know, I've been a journalist for more years than I care to remember, and I've been following Hillary and the Obamas now for many, many years. I've got a huge Rolodex of sources. And people ask me, well, why, knowing what you've written in the past, why do they talk to you? And there are really two reasons. One, people love to boast about their access to the president, the first lady, the Clintons, the queens and kings of this world. It makes them more important in their own eyes and the eyes of others. So they talk. And the other reason is they want to get their side of the story out. So if you go to somebody who doesn't like what you've written but still thinks, well, I've got a chance to at least get some of my ideas in Klein's book, they will talk to you.
Okay, Ed Klein here, author of Blood Feud at 580KIDO. Let me try and be original. How has President Obama changed from the amateur who you covered initially?
It's a really good question, Kevin, because I've changed my mind a little bit about that since I wrote the book, The Amateur. In addition to being an amateur, which means he's inexperienced and he's not suited for, you know, the give and take of politics, there's something very immature about this guy. Here's what I mean. If you're a baby, you're a young, you're a little kid, if you wish for something, you think you're entitled to get it because you just want it. That's Obama. He gives these speeches. He wants something. He doesn't think he needs to work for it. He doesn't think he needs to do horse trading with Congress to get it. It's just because I, Obama, want it, and I'm entitled to it. And that's a huge streak of immaturity in the guy who is in our White House and supposedly is the leader of the free world.
Ed Klein with us, 580KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Last time we talked, Michelle gave Oprah the boot and had some jokes. Now We've got her and Valerie Jarrett, according to Blood Feud, Ed Klein, reinventing the term mean girls about Hillary Clinton.
That's right. You know, at night, Valerie Jarrett, who is the most important advisor in the White House, best friends to both the president and the first lady, she disappears from the West Wing and goes into the elevator and upstairs to the residence. And that's why her nickname in the White House is the Night Stalker, because she at night disappears into the residence where she has dinner with the Obamas, only official who does, and knows the Malia and Sasha and Malia, and then spends the evenings very often sharing a bottle of Chardonnay wine with Michelle, talking about and gossiping about people they don't like. And first among that list is Hillary Clinton, who they've nicknamed Hildebeest after the menacing new GNU, the new that roams the Serengeti in Africa.
I don't know even how you got that one, Ed Klein, but what's
Well, I'll tell you how I got it. Valerie Jarrett's told several of her friends that that's exactly what the nickname they call her, call Hillary. And I interviewed those friends.
Yeah, well, I'm sure your computers are bugged and everything else now for you, buddy.
That's right. I'm wondering about this phone call. Maybe the National Security Agency is tapping into our call.
Hopefully they'll buy some books.
Yeah, well, I hope so.
Ed Klein, let's continue on. What is the First Lady really like? You've really spent a lot of time studying her and the president. We have an idea of what he's about, but what about her? We have this. We have the media's propaganda about her. Then we have the real Michelle. What's she like?
Well, you know, the original Michelle, when Barack first ran for president, was the same Michelle who referred to his stinky socks, his bad breath in the morning. She's the one who told Jody Cantor, a reporter for the New York Times, that when she sees Obama, her husband, behind the Resolute desk, that's the famous desk in the White House, in the Oval Office, what are you doing there? You don't belong there. I mean, she's a caustic, sarcastic, put-down artist. And Oprah Winfrey has told her friends that one of the things she can't stand is being around Obama and Michelle when Michelle is constantly putting down her husband, the president. That's her character. That's her personality. She's got that kind of, sour look upon life. And that Michelle is carefully hidden by her public relations people in the East Wing of the White House, which has they've portrayed her as this, you know, anti-obesity campaign, loves kids and green food and does mom dancing with Jimmy Fallon and that kind of stuff. But that's not the real Michelle. The real Michelle is the one who's constantly putting down her husband.
Let's get to the Clintons and the Obamas. Particularly troubling in your book, Blood Feud, Ed Klein, is Hillary Clinton's reaction to Benghazi and Bill Clinton's role into trying to smooth out the roughness, despite his own reservations about the president.
What happened there is that during the attack on our consulate in Benghazi, Hillary was in the State Department monitoring it moment by moment. And she got periodic updates from David Petraeus, the head of the CIA, from Tom Donilon, the National Security Advisor, and even from a guy named Hicks, who was the deputy ambassador in Libya. So she was one of the most knowledgeable officials in Washington that this was, from the start, a terrorist attack, and she knew it. But then at 10 o'clock that night, during the attack that was still going on, she got a phone call from the president. And he, according to my sources, told her that he wanted her to put out a official State Department statement saying that this attack was caused by a video and was spontaneous and wasn't a terrorist attack. And she was appalled. She called Bill Clinton, her husband, who was then in Little Rock, and told him what the president said. And they didn't, you know, they knew that this wasn't true. They considered her resigning as Secretary of State and then realized that if she did, Democrats would never forgive her for hurting Obama's chances for re-election. So she went along with this lie, knowing it was a lie. And she was an enthusiastic liar about it. And now she's saying, well, I didn't know, and, you know, I wasn't kept up to date. That's not true. She was totally up to date. And a good friend of mine says that the Clintons, given the opportunity to tell the truth or tell a lie on more occasions than not, they'll choose to lie.
And yet you have Bill Clinton making this deal with Obama to help Hillary Clinton. You have the golf game. You have Obama reluctant to embrace Bill Clinton. And yet I don't get how Bill Clinton campaigned for the president during the 2012 election.
It was a definite political calculation. They had a golf game, excuse me, in September of 2011, almost a year before the Democratic National Convention. Obama's poll ratings were in the basement. He looked like he might lose re-election. He reached out to Bill Clinton for help. Clinton realized he had some leverage, and he said, okay, I'll help you. You know, this is politicians talking now. If in return in 2016, you come out and support Hillary for president. And that was the deal they struck during this golf game at Andrews Air Force Base, which has, you know, two or three big golf courses. After he won election, Obama reneged on the deal. And this has infuriated Bill Clinton. And ever since then, he's been taking pot shots at Barack Obama at every opportunity.
It's amazing that you detail in your book about a dinner and that Obama rudely disses the former president when he's speaking.
Well, he does. you know, Bill has said on more than one occasion that the Obamacare is a law that is a flawed law. I mean, this is Bill Clinton knocking Obamacare and that it needs to be fixed. He said that he and Hillary have both said that the IRS scandal is a legitimate scandal, which flies in the face of what the White House is saying and trying to cover up. Bill Clinton is not going to be a friend of Barack Obama's for the last 2 years of Obama's term, believe me. And he's told Hillary, according to my sources, on numerous occasions that when she runs for president, which she has every intention of doing, that she has to put some air between herself and Obama and convince people that she's not going to be a continuation of the Obama policies, but that she's going to be the more effective, professional, experienced hand on the tiller. And that basically she's promising a third term for the Clintons, not for the Obamas.
Kevin Miller wants to hear from you.
We are the Rebel Alliance getting together and bucking the trend.
Yes, good morning, Kevin. I love your show, by the way.
You got a great show. I sure appreciate it.
So there's a lot of people out here appreciate your show and appreciate what you do. And
good morning, Kevin. You're doing fantastic. Gosh, you are really, I think, top.
I appreciate you, Kevin. I'm your biggest fan.
Earning your trust every morning. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, Ed Klein with us, author of Blood Feud here at 580 KIDO. Ed, going back to your book, a couple things here. Number one, you have Charlize Theron, picture with Bill Clinton, a big-time movie actress, beautiful star, saying, quote, "I've told him that that when we're back in the White House, he'll have to behave," said Hillary. What do you make of that one? Is Bill Clinton behaving?
Well, you know, that's a good question. According to Hillary, and I quote her from many sources who have been around her when she said this, he still has a lot of life left in him, quote unquote, meaning that he still likes the ladies. He still likes to be with them. Hillary, of course, doesn't admit or say that Bill goes any further than just being around them. I, quite frankly, did not. I decided in this book not to get into his sexual life because I thought that would overwhelm all the more important issues in this book. And I didn't get into anybody's sexual orientation and blah, blah, blah. It seems to me that We're beyond that now. Where we are is people claiming that the Republicans are split between the Tea Party and the establishment, but would, in fact, the future of this country and the Democratic Party rests in this huge blood feud between the Clintons and the Obamas, and that's the important story.
Ed Klein, whether people like Hillary or Bill Clinton or not, especially Bill Clinton, he's an astute, above average, perhaps the best politician we've seen in our lifetime. Does he feel it's his duty, his legacy, to bring back the Clinton White House and pretty much eviscerate the Obama legacy?
It's a great question because, you know, we have a 22nd Amendment that was passed in 1947 that says no one can serve more than two terms as president of the United States. Bill Clinton has served two terms. Basically, what he's doing is what Vladimir Putin has done in the Soviet Union. He's trying to get around this law by getting Hillary elected president, but that is in effect also re-electing Bill Clinton two for the price of one in the White House. We know that. We know if Hillary is president, Bill's going to be right there in the White House whispering in her ear and being very influential. And I think that this is not something that we want to do, go back to the Clinton era with all the terrible things that we forget happened during then, not the least of which, Kevin, one last point, is that during the Clinton time in office, he ignored the terrorist threat to the United States. He did nothing about it except a couple of missiles in Afghanistan that went nowhere. I think it would be a huge mistake to have the Clintons back in the White House.
Fascinating read, Blood Feud. The author, Ed Klein, with us at 580KIDO. Going to a quote from Bill Clinton, "I have to do all I can to prepare the campaign playbooks," Bill Clinton said, "but I have to accept the fact that if I fall by the wayside, you have to continue without me and make a positive thing out of it." Most people in Bill Clinton's age would be hanging out with the grandkids. What drives him, and your thoughts behind that statement that you have in your book?
I think Bill Clinton would die trying to get back into the White House. I mean, I think that's his most important thing. And, in fact, he said to Hillary in the presence of several people, a couple of whom I spoke to, that if I should die, I want you to put on your widow's weeds, your black clothes, and exploit my death because my death is going to be the equivalent of 2 million votes for you for president. I mean, that's Bill Clinton, the politician, talking even beyond the grave.
Ed Klein, how healthy is Hillary?
Well, it's hard to say because I called her doctor, Alan Schwartz, who's her cardiologist. And naturally, the doctor decided not to talk to me because it's confidential. But according to what Hillary's friends have been told by Bill and Hillary, she has a heart valve problem. It was a consideration of having heart valve replacement surgery. They decided not to do that, but that she had to be monitored carefully for the rest of her life. And none of this has been made public until my book came out, Blood Feud. And I think it is incumbent upon Hillary Clinton to release her medical records fully, not just two or three pages of summary, but the whole thing, so that the American public can decide what they think about her appropriateness to run for president.
Ed Klein with us. Two final quick questions. Number one, we know what's going to happen after the election with the Clintons, what they're going to be doing. What's the future for the Obamas post-White House?
Well, there's a lot of talk about Barack Obama setting up a foundation like Bill Clinton's. There's talk in the White House among the Obama people about how he would like to continue to be the head of the Democratic Party. But, you know, if there's another Democratic president, that president, if it's Hillary or anybody else, is going to automatically replace him. And that's something he doesn't want. He's not eager to see Hillary in the White House. As far as Michelle is concerned, she's talking about running for Senate from Illinois. That's a possibility. And she and Valerie Jarrett have also talked about, believe it or not, and this comes from a couple of sources, spending a lot of time in Spain and France and just living there, just the two of them, separate from Barack Obama, because they love Spain and France. And, you know, writing a book and doing some speeches and being on the boards of directors and things like that. I think they will have the Obamas a very separate life after the White House.
Ed Klein, I know we're up against it. I got to quickly get to this question. What's the fixation with NBC to become the official propaganda network of the Obamas, whether it's Jimmy Fallon, Brian Williams, or anyone else? They seem to be the arm, the PR arm of the White House.
Yeah, and just the way the New York Times seems to be the PR arm of the White House as far as print newspapers are concerned. It's a terrible trend in journalism where major outlets like NBC and the New York Times become the stalking dogs, the walking dogs, the running dogs of the Democratic Party. And I think they're hurting their own credibility. We see, for instance, that latest polls show that people have very little faith in journalists these days. They're right down there with the Congress, and it's only their own fault for not doing their right job, which is to hold all people, Democrats and Republicans, responsible for the behavior.
Ed Klein, Blood Feud, good to have you back, my friend.
It's been great to talk to you, Kevin. Thanks a lot.
Take care now. There we have it. Ed Klein's got to catch a plane. Your thoughts on the exclusive interview that we had? Remember, you may have seen Ed Klein on Drudge, on the New York Post, but we had him here, right here, with you, Kevin Miller, and me, 580 KIDO.
For MZ, weekdays noon till 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
All right, to smoke or not to smoke, that's the big issue going on in Garden City. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. With us now is the mayor of Garden City, Mr. Evans, Mayor Evans, John Evans with us. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us here at 580 KIDO with Kevin Miller. So let's talk a little bit about the smoking ordinance, the proposed issue, certainly getting a lot of media attention.
It really is. It has gotten a lot of attention, and it's an issue that, of course, came up in Boise a couple of years ago, and the proponents are interested in seeing it proliferate throughout other cities.
Yeah, and a lot of establishments in your town, in your city, got really benefited by the smoking ban going into Boise. Would this latest proposal impact great businesses in Garden City?
Well, the original proposal that came to the council would have impacted virtually every business in Garden City that allowed smoking. Then at the last council meeting, it was amended, the proposal, to exclude bars and bingo parlors, and then it defined hookahs in the same category as bars. So it took the heat off most of the businesses.
I was going to say, I don't even know if I can spell hookah. But
H-O-O-K-A-H-S, and I've got it in front of me.
Well, that's why you're an elected official. I'm not, so good one there. So where do we go from here concerning the adjustment to the proposal?
Well, what the process is, it's heard at three successive meetings, and it can be further amended. So on July 14th, the council will consider it again and see if they want it to go forward as amended, whether they want to amend it further or whether they want to, if they don't vote to have it read for the second time, then it would die.
How do you think it's going to play out?
Well, I don't know. I know the those that were really supportive of the original version have now withdrawn their support from the amended version. So I've got people, of course, that have businesses that allow smoking that don't support it. I've got the original proponents that don't support it. So my personal perspective is it probably ought to just go. We ought to let it die. I'm not sure what we're accomplishing.
Except a lot of media buzz.
A lot of media buzz. It does some other things. It probably the most significant thing, it would, in the hookah bars, which are smoking establishments, it would prohibit those under 21 from entering there. State code, of course, allows smoking at age 18. But this would further restrict that in Garden City to, at least in these hookah bars, to 21.
What's your personal position on this?
You know, my position is it's overregulation. You know, there's no question that secondhand smoke is detrimental to your health. But there are, with very, very few exceptions, you can control whether or not you're exposed to it. So if you don't want to go into an establishment where they're smoking, if you don't want to work in the smoking establishment, you can make that personal decision. Those that are really pushing this, the intent is really to deal with the health of employees that are subjected to secondhand smoke that don't have an option from their perspective on whether or not they breathe it. They get in a job and they need the job, and people smoke and they have to breathe it, and that's a health hazard. That's pretty much the position of those that are in favor of it. But I think that's probably the exception to the rule.
Garden City Mayor John Evans with us. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Moving on from the smoking, by the way, excellent job this weekend handling the massive crowd of the Boise Music Festival.
Well, we had a lot of help. I don't think the general public has the understanding of what it takes to plan one of those. So Garden City, Boise City Fire, Boise Police, Meridian Police, the Idaho State Police, Ada County Paramedics. It was a real collaborative effort. Of course, we're on we're on point with the traffic control, but we had a lot of folks out.
Well, it's great. It's great for the area, great for Garden City, and we had the Hawks playing an early game to accommodate, just like last year. And it was funny. We had Kevin Godwin on here a couple days ago talking about it. Our boss, our vice president here, that along with you and others have worked so diligently. What's it like from your perspective to coordinate with a private entity on this property and then to have Boise, Meridian, the state police, the paramedics, the county paramedics? That's a lot of logistics, and that's just for first responder services, never mind electricity, never mind logistics, never mind a lot of things. It must take a lot of planning.
It does. There were half a dozen or more planning sessions started about probably 75 days ago. But it just kind of demonstrates that, particularly I can speak to the first responder issue, we're all in this together. And the various agencies, EMS, fire, and police, really lock arms when there's a big event like this, whether it's the triathlon in Boise or an event here at the fairgrounds or some event in Meridian, their parades. Everybody, you know, when you call for the help, it's there. So we have formal memorandums of understanding in place to formalize this, but it's great to be in an area where if you call for the help, the cavalry comes.
Now, that's always reassuring, except, we'll stay out of the politics of it. Let me ask you about your city economically between Boise and Meridian and what you offer businesses and to keep businesses there. There's cooperation, but it's competitive as well. You want as many jobs, as many folks employed in Garden City, right?
Yeah, well, certainly we do. But, you know, it's very interesting because the questions come up with lots of smaller towns. You know, why do we need all these little towns? And it's very interesting that they develop their own kind of character. So, for example, in the last 7 or 8 years, Garden City's really developed a kind of a, we call it live, work, create, but it's morphed into, we've got breweries, wineries, we've got very small entrepreneurs, we've got areas where you can, if you manufacture picture frames, you can do that in the back and sell them in the front and live upstairs. So you just develop a little niche. It's not unlike any other real estate activity, if you want to think of it that way. You find a niche and you cater to it and fulfill a need that's in the public. And then we do what we can to help the private sector succeed. So we do things that the private sector can't, like provide fire flows, rebuild old water and sewer lines, and that sort of thing.
That's very exciting stuff, rebuilding the sewer lines.
Yeah, oh, it's really exciting, but development doesn't start on the ground. It starts under the ground.
You're right. But again, what's your pitch as far as when people are looking? Because, again, you've got you've got yourself, you've got Boise, and you've got Meridian, and you're right in the middle. You're where the action is.
Well, we've got a lot of pass-through. We've got a lot of traffic exposure on Glenwood and Chendon, so you got good visibility. You've got access to decision-makers in Garden City. Just because of the mere size, it's tougher sometimes to get to decision-makers and have discussions in some of the larger cities. I don't have an unlisted number. My number's in the phone book. You know, it's not hard to get a hold of me. You can usually get in to see me within 2 or 3 days, even though this is technically a part-time position. So that's an advantage. And then, we try to personalize helping folks get through the regulatory malaise. You know, the Land Use Planning Act requires us to do certain things. Federal regulations require us to do certain things, but we have an attitude that, you know, let's help you get through the process instead of maybe leaving you out there hanging on your own. So it's just attitude. We've got location. We've got traffic counts. So I think there are a lot of things. We have a district for small entrepreneurs in the older part of town where we've got lots of specialty businesses, good place to do that. So good access to the freeway. So it's location, 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 most of it.
Mayor Evans, we appreciate it. Thank you for your candor. We'd love to have you back.
Well, you got my number.
All right. Take care, sir. Have a great day.
Okay.
All right. There we have it. Mayor Evans with us from Garden City, talking about the smoking ordinance, the adjustments to it, what that means for local businesses, number one. Number two, how Garden City coordinates with Town Square Media and the folks here for the largest festival, I'd say, in the state, the Boise Music Festival. If you were there, over 80,000 over the weekend. Amazing how there were no, knock on wood, no disruptions on that traffic. They handled it beautifully this year. So props to everybody who worked in front of the camera and behind the camera to make that happen. Truly, it was just like a well-run machine. And then how Garden City positions itself economically between Boise and Meridian. 6:50, Kevin Miller in the morning. Let's get you to work.
Don Hannity, weekday afternoons at 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And welcome to Monday. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, we'll talk a little Common Core and much more issues of the day. You know, it's interesting. I'm a little jealous of Billings, Montana. And those of you that have been to Billings, you're thinking, Kevin, why are you jealous of Billings, Montana? Well, former Vice President Dick Cheney was in town and had this to say concerning President Obama.
When I was secretary, we had basically a two-war strategy. We had to maintain sufficient forces to be able to fight two wars at once. He switched that. Now we're going to have one war strategy. And that's all being done as a rationale to justify further deep cuts in the defense budget so we can allocate that money to the food stamps or whatever else he wants to spend on.
It's got a point there, what Vice President Cheney's saying. And look, whether you like Dick Cheney or not, I admire his courage, his guts, his fortitude for saying what's really happening. We're transferring our limited financial resources from the military, which we need now more than ever, to the food stamp program. And unfortunately, we have a lot of good people, a lot of good hardworking people that don't make enough money. You know, it's a tragedy here at 580KIDO, and I often refer to this, that we've kind of redefined the family, we've redefined the social safety net. And it really comes down to this. We have a lot of people that work hard, that don't make enough money, that have chosen to keep their responsibilities, to honor their commitments, and stay together no matter what the stress, no matter what the strain, no matter what anything else outside influence may pertain, and love one another. You know, that's the true definition of love, is that when somebody is not themselves, that you take care of them. I have a friend of mine whose spouse has undergone some major problems in her life, and he has been with her every step of the way. See, to me, that is love, not what we see on these scandalous, stimulating shows. Can we have a show just once where we don't have sex after the first scene? Can we have a show where just once we talk about the value of unconditional love, relationship building, and not sleeping with the person of the week? Is that too much to ask? Can we tone down the sexuality in our society today and you're saying, wow, what did you have in your coffee, Kay-Millie? That's a lot before 7 a.m. It is. But you take a look at it. That's what real love is. And when we go back to the social welfare program, we have people on one hand that need the help, on the other hand that are taking advantage of it. And now we see this program growing. There are more people on disability than actually working in America today. And our military is getting cut to the bone. Never mind all heck breaking loose in the Middle East. Never mind China feeling empowered. Of course they feel empowered. Heck, we can't even control our borders. The president wants $2 billion for the borders. Where is that going to come from? Is it going to come from you? Is it going to come from me? Well, yeah, and it's going to come from the military. That's the scary part, right? That's the scary part indeed. When we take a look at what Dick Cheney said. Dick Cheney was right on the bat when he says this. We've gotten rid of our military budget for social programs.
We had basically a two-war strategy. We had to maintain sufficient forces to be able to fight two wars at once. He switched that. Now we're going to have one war strategy. And that's all being done as a rationale to justify further deep cuts in the defense budget so we can allocate that money to the food stamps or whatever else he wants to spend on.
Got to give it to Dick Cheney. He tells it like it is. Quickly to traffic now at 6:59. Kevin Miller in the morning. Wondering what the markets are going to do this week. Well, I got news for you. Not a lot. The slowest week of the year. But our friend Dave Pezzo, Pezzo Financial, will be joining us. We'll talk a little bit about the markets and take really, a half of the year review of the markets. Hey, it's great if you're in it. If you're not, are you missing the boat? Or are you doing the safe and logical move for you and your family? We'll discuss that with Dave Pezzo, plus a preview of the God and Country Festival this week in Napa. Don't miss it.